Have you ever thought, what is a professional? Probably not. Here at the Professional by Choice podcast, we interview professionals of all types. C-suite executives, entrepreneurs, social workers, accountants, athletes, you name it. We get the privilege of hearing their stories and figuring out just what makes them a professional in their field. You're listening to the Professional by Choice podcast. And now, here's your host, Chris Molina.
Today we're speaking with Adam Carroll, and Adam is the founder and author of Broke, Busted, and Disgusted, which is a pro-education documentary film that talks about the true cost of a college degree, and their mission is to help students graduate with less debt. I've had the pleasure of watching it, and it is a great documentary. He's also the founder of National Financial Educators, NFE for short. And through NFE, Adam has delivered a financial literacy program called The Money Game. And he's presented at over 500 college campuses and delivered this message to more than 200,000 people. Adam also has two TED Talks, including one he did at the London Business School, where he talks about how he swapped his kids' Monopoly money with real money, 10 grand, and watched them play. I love that talk, by the way. That's a great talk. He's written two books that deal with financial literacy, Winning the Money Game, A Rule of Achieving Financial Success for Young People, and 30 Days to 1K, Learning How to Control Your Money, Regain Your Freedom, and Achieve Financial Contentment. And if you ever met Adam, you know that he's incredibly motivated, he's pretty inspiring, and a complete financial literacy junkie. But another thing you would know is that first and foremost, he's a dad and a husband, and I've heard him say multiple times that his lifelong goal is to build a bigger life that is sustainable in terms of health, joy, and happiness for him, his wife, and his kids. Adam, thank you for joining us in the PVC podcast today.
Chris, so excited to be here with you, man. Thank you for the introduction. I appreciate that immensely.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super excited to talk about the things we're going to talk about today. But first, how was your day?
My day was great, man. I got to go to a conference this morning, which was not too far from my home. And I happen to be speaking there tomorrow, but I wanted to kind of get a sense of what the topics were and who was speaking and what the program was all about. So I did that. I've worked on a new website that I'm launching soon, had a couple of really great conversations, met with my documentary partner. It's just been a really good day so far.
That is awesome. So before we get into your story, you kind of touched on maybe an upcoming project with your website, but do you have any current or upcoming projects or life events that you're excited about that you don't mind sharing with us today?
Oh, man, life events. Well, I have a number of speaking engagements lined up here in the next 2 or 3 weeks that I'm very, very excited about. I'm doing a couple of pretty national groups. One is all of the state university financial aid directors are getting together in San Diego because where else would they get together? You know what I mean? and I get to go talk to them about the state of college funding and how students are sort of making their decisions around where they go to school, how much they're borrowing for school, what they do after. And this is all in light of a Wall Street Journal article that was just put out. And it suggests that there is $200 billion in student loans outstanding right now that may never, ever get paid back.
Oh, man.
And so I'm really excited about just kind of that world and all of the speaking engagement opportunities that have come about as a result of that.
Sure.
And then the other one that's a big one right now is I'm working on consolidating my entire brand into one website where people can go to become more money savvy. And the name of the site is moneysavvy.com. And so we've been working on, you know, just creating kind of a virtual catalog of all the stuff that I've been doing. And it will be an advice site, and there's going to be a podcast that goes along with it, and just a lot of really cool side projects that go along with that site. So I'm just pumped about that.
That's great to hear that you're happy about that. When do you think you're going to launch, or do you even have a launch date yet?
Well, we'll end up having – April is Financial Literacy Month, so we'll have some announcements in the month of April. The podcast will start in May. And my intent, Chris, is to start having some events throughout the country by the end of the year. So if you are interested in becoming more money savvy, and let's face it, everyone needs a little more money savvy in their life, going to the site and getting on our mailing list will be great, because we will promote any upcoming events, whether they're, you know, webinars or live events in person.
Awesome. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And so bouncing off of that and from your introduction, it's abundantly clear that you are passionate about financial literacy.
Totally.
Why financial literacy?
You know, it goes back to my college days, Chris. Honestly, my mom and dad were great to my sister and I. I won't say we were spoiled by any means, but I'd say there wasn't a lot that if we really wanted or needed it, we didn't get. You know, we heard no a fair amount, but if it was something really important, like a camp or an event that we really wanted to see, our parents generally made that happen. But I got to college and I sort of had this mentality that if I wanted it, I would get it. And when I got out of school, I had $20,000+ in student loans and $8,000 in credit card debt. And I was the byproduct of growing up in a world where if I wanted it, I probably would get it some way.
Okay.
And because in college today you can get it, you know, super easy, whether you're in college or not, you know, debt is rampant and it's available pretty much everywhere. And I think what most people do today is they sacrifice their future financial happiness for their present desires. And it occurred to me after meeting my wife, who is unbelievably money savvy. And she, you know, she turned me from a spender into a saver, or at least an even Steven. And I realized that there were a lot of people that needed this advice. And so I, you know, turned my attention to the people that most needed it. And I've loved this business. I've loved helping people understand how to manage money, how to invest money, how to decrease debt, and ultimately make their income extremely efficient.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. It's anywhere. It's not just if you're a student, you can borrow money. Anybody can borrow money. And my time in the military showed me that also you don't have it there. There's no class that they teach you when they teach you to be a Marine or a soldier or an airman or Coast Guardman or a sailor. You learn all those things and then you're thrown into the real world and you're making money and you have the same education as somebody going out of college as far as balancing your personal finances. So yeah, I wholeheartedly stand behind the movement that you've created and you're continuing to create. One thing that I did want to say, I've heard you speak a couple of times, and one of the things that you speak about is mastery, and that's the main topic that I want to talk to today with you about, because being a professional by choice, let me rewind. Whenever I was starting professional by choice, I sent text messages, I sent emails, I sent Facebook messages, and I asked about 100 people that I know if I could ask you one question and just have a knee-jerk reaction. Well, I want to know what your knee-jerk response is to that question. And they all said yes. And then so I asked them, what's a professional? And over 70% of those people responded with a person that knows what he's doing, a person that is good at their job. And basically, if you break it all down, being good at what you do. And hearing you talk about mastery, it seems like that is at least a huge part of what the perception of a professional is. So can you go a little bit into how mastery goes on in your brain and some of the key points that you hit on whenever you're talking about mastering a skill?
Yeah, for sure. I think, and I appreciate the question immensely, because mastery is one of those topics that I love talking about with other people just to get their impression on it. For me, and I relate a lot of things to what I do on a day-to-day basis, which is, you know, I'm in the speaking business. I do a lot of professional speaking. I'll do anywhere from 50 to 70 engagements a year, and I'm on the road generally between 120 and 150 days a year. So I love what I do. I love getting up in front of a group and creating that aha moment. And it was probably 7 to 10 years ago I was listening to another speaker who I'm sure it was a CD program or may have even been a cassette tape. You know, that's how many years it might have been. And I remember them saying, if you want to be good at something, then pursue mastery in that one thing. And ultimately the question was sort of posed, what do you want to be a master at? Like, what do you want to absolutely dominate? And I just, at that point, I thought, I want to master the speaking game. And to be a to pursue mastery, no one's ever a master. If you know what the pursuit of mastery is all about, it means that you never actually attain it. You're in constant pursuit of it, but it's always revealing that there's more to be learned. And I think if I were to describe it, that's what I would say, that for someone to want to master or have mastery, it is about the pursuit of mastery and never attaining it. And those who pursue mastery always get better and better and better.
Okay. And so it's not just important to, one, obviously find out what you want to pursue, but it also, it seems like being humble on your journey.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like from what you're saying that you could be one of the experts in a certain subject in the world, but it's important to never think that you know everything.
Yes, exactly. And I relate a couple of things to this. Number one was, in ancient, I think, Roman literature, there was some story about someone mentioning that Socrates was the smartest man who was alive. And yep. And he basically said, I know one thing. He came back as a retort, I know only one thing, and that is I know nothing. Mm-hmm. And for the smartest man alive at the time to say, there's only one thing I know for true and for certain, and that's that I don't know anything.
Sure.
I think he was in pursuit of mastery in whatever industry or genre he was studying at any given point in time.
Absolutely. You're, and I don't know if you know this about me, but you're talking to a philosophy minor that would do it full time if it made sense. So I love philosophy, and I've studied that a bunch of times. So
the philosophy, I know, the philosophy factory wasn't hiring when you got out. Is that what you're saying?
I must have gone to the wrong job fair, I think. but that's what Socrates said. He said that after talking to experts, because he would talk to a blacksmith, he would go and talk to a politician, and he would talk to all these people that were widely considered artisans and professionals in their fields. And after maybe 5 or 6 minutes, I think, he said he realized that he is smarter than everybody else, but it's because he knows that he doesn't know everything. If you get a blacksmith that is really good at his job and you start asking him about politics or you ask him about fighting, they're going to start thinking that they know a lot more than they actually do. And that's why he thought that way. And I always bring it back to present day, as I do with most things in philosophy. And it makes a lot of sense, because you can turn on lots of channels or search on YouTube and hear actors and actresses and athletes that are good at what they do, but talking about world issues or politics or things that are completely outside of their profession, as if they were speaking factually.
Absolutely.
On those topics. So what advice would you say, starting at point A, if somebody's just trying to find out what they want to be good at, because that's where it starts, I think.
It does. And I think there's probably a handful of steps that someone could take to begin their pursuit of mastery. I think the very first thing, and I might, if I can put two things out there, Chris, this might be helpful.
Sure.
The first is, I think, to have a mindset around what mastery and what growth really looks like. There's a book called The Growth Mindset, and I believe it's Carol Zwick,
okay,
that wrote the book. And she basically details the difference between the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. And a growth mindset says, I will never, ever know everything. I'm always growing. And the fixed mindset says, I know how to do this or I don't know how to do this. It's very fixed. Like, okay. I'm really good at this, I'm not good at this. Versus, you know, I'm not very good at this, but I'm constantly getting better. You know, that would be indicative of the growth mindset. So I think number one is identifying whether you have a fixed or a growth mindset. And in using the speaking world as an example, you know, there are people who say, I'm no good at public speaking. I can't do this. I don't want to do this. It makes me nervous. I've never been good at it. That's a fixed mindset. Someone who says, I've been asked to speak. It makes me nervous, but I want to get better at it. And I'm going to do whatever I can to get better at it, has a very growth mindset.
Okay.
We do our best to instill the growth mindset in our children and, you know, in various other people because let's face it. I mean, we're in a world that's constantly evolving and we need to get better and better and better at lots of things. So I think number one is mindset. Number two is you got to find a mentor or someone that you can look up to or aspire to or watch to see what they're doing and emulate what they do. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, trying to be someone, as an example, one of my mentors and a guy that I look up to a lot is Jack Canfield. And Jack Canfield is the co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And he wrote The Aladdin Factor and The Power of Focus and just a really talented speaker and trainer and coach and consultant. But if I tried to be Jack, I would only ever be a second-rate Jack.
Sure.
Now, I can watch what Jack does and try and emulate a lot of his speaking style, his mannerisms. I love the way he attributes what he says to other people. You know, I try and do those things. I will never, ever be Jack, but I can be Adam at the best level that I can possibly attain right now at this day if I follow some of Jack's methodologies and do that, but do it in my own way.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you're talking about two things. One, apprenticeship, which I think is very important. And then two, I call it building up your toolbox. If you want to do anything, you need the tools to do them. And I was told this at a pretty young age that whenever you're watching somebody, you're going to see one or two things and probably both. You're going to see good things that you like and you wish you could be like, and then bad things that you would say in your mind, I never want to be that way.
Yes.
And so you need to grab those two things, put them in your toolbox, because sometime in your lifetime, you will most likely need to revert back to that and use that tool. And I've done that so many times, and it's one of the reasons, one of the saving graces, that if I'm around somebody, or say I have a supervisor that maybe I don't care for that much, or the relationship is that they don't care for me very much, or they just rub me the wrong way, or vice versa, I always look back and think I'm building up my toolbox, because I know what I don't want to do in the future, and it's XYZ.
Absolutely.
And as far as apprenticeship goes, whenever I was in the Marine Corps, I got heard advice, and as a young Marine, you go through boot camp and lots of different training, and you're constantly hearing advice because they're essentially telling you what to do. we were leaving Marine combat training, which is what you do directly after boot camp, and we're going to go to our MOS school where we're going to learn our jobs, and we're on our way out of MCT is what they call it. And one of the gunnies there, he said, hey, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to MOS school, and then after that, you're going to go to the fleet. And the fleet is where the actual Marine Corps is. Whenever you're done training, you go to the fleet, and that's where you be a Marine, basically. And so you're going to go to the fleet, and you're going to be in a unit. You're going to be a PFC. You're going to be a Lance Corporal. That's going to be your rank. And you're going to have a corporal to look over you, or maybe a Lance Corporal that's been there for a while. And here's what you need to do. You need to find that person, make sure that he's a good Marine, and tell him, Lance Corporal so-and-so, Corporal so-and-so, I want to be just like you. And here's what's going to happen. That Marine is going to tell you to get the hell away from him. And he's probably going to haze you a little bit or correct you for saying that to him. And then a couple weeks later, he's going to pull you under his wing, or she. And it's because, one, you're flattering that person, but two, they've gotten to that point that they want to give back, and they want people and young Marines and just young people to teach. So, I think that apprenticeship is important, and not many of us realize the value of it, or take that first step of just asking, hey, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions a week?
Yeah, totally. I heard one time, Chris, that and the idea of an apprenticeship is an amazing one, because you're learning from someone who is either pursuing mastery or has become, you know, somewhat of a master in something. The master carpenter and, you know, master plumber, those kinds of words come to mind. But yep. I heard one time that you should have a mentor and a mentee at all times. One is pulling you forward, the other one you are pulling forward and or is pushing you forward, because you got to learn more than they, you know, what they know. And I've tried to live that way, always having a mentor and a mentee, and it's amazing sort of the perspective that gives you. And a quick story on that, I worked with a guy by the name of Rick Lefke. And Rick and I became good friends, and Rick is an amazing, amazing trainer and consultant, and just a very, both humble and connected, like spiritually aware kind of guy. And Rick had a mentor at one point in his life that he said, and I can't remember what the gentleman's name was, but let's say it was Roger. He said, "Roger, I want to be just like you someday." And Roger said, "Rick, that will never happen." And Rick was destroyed by that comment at first. I mean, I remember he said, I was crushed, because I felt like Roger didn't believe that I could do that, you know, that I could be him. And sure. He said, "Well, Roger, why would you say something like that to me? That really, you know, kind of sets me back." And Roger said, "The reason you will never be like me is if you are like me, that means I've stopped growing, and I will never, ever stop growing."
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I think the only difference in our stories is that one person was a bit more vulgar than the other.
there were some four-letter expletives thrown at you.
and maybe an increase in decibel level in the voice. But we talked about starting that road towards mastery. Yep. Once you're through that threshold of starting, where do you think it starts from there? The couple of things that pop into my mind are deep observation, immersion, things like that. Just creating, just diving into the world of blank.
Totally. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's observation and immersion. It's for me, again, using the speaking as an example, people think I'm a little crazy, but I will watch a TED Talk over and over and over again. And I generally will watch them three times at the beginning. I will watch and listen. So I'll literally take it all in. And then I will turn off the audio and just watch and see their body motion and what, you know, where was I engaged and where was I not. I'll look at their slides and all those kinds of things. And then I will just listen and not watch. And I do that with a lot of speakers. I've done it with comedians. I've done it with various other documentary filmmakers and random things where I'm picking up every nuance, right? And for me, that's observation. And then immersion for me, I think, came about in the pursuit of mastery. There was a period of time where every night I watched Comedy Central. And I watched Comedy Central night after night after night, and I would watch these comedian specials. So the comics would come out and they would each do a 30-minute set, and I would just watch. And every time I found a joke that I thought was funny, I'd write it down, or I'd write down why I thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. And I started breaking down what made a joke funny. And, you know, I know now there's five or six different methods of creating humor that I can do in a program. Even though I'm not really crafting a joke, I can say some outrageous figure. Like, in my wife's purse, there are literally 17 million coupons. And it's funny. People are like, "Oh, that's funny. That's outrageous." Sure. Well, that's one of the methods of humor. And that all comes from immersion, just being in it on a regular basis. I have a good friend by the name of Mike Wagner, who runs a company called the White Rabbit Group. And Mike will immerse himself in a subject for 30 days at a time. So he will pick something he's pursuing mastery in. Let's say it's meditation, or it's, it could be storytelling or whatever it may be. He just picks random things. And then for 30 days, he does nothing but study that. Every day, every night, he spends X amount of time, 90 minutes or whatever it is, spending time just learning that thing. And through his immersive process, you sit down and talk to this guy and swear he's Socrates. I mean, he knows everything about everything. It's amazing.
Man, he's got to be one of the most interesting people to talk to, and maybe the most frustrating. You're not going to surprise him, it seems like.
He will out-book reference you like nobody's business. And I love it. I'm always like, Mike, I have like 15 new books I have to read because of talking to you.
Yep, and I'm very thankful for those stories because I think they illustrate something that's very important, and it's those two things. Those are the two things that I always talk about whenever I'm giving advice to friends or family members about anything that they want to just be good at. And it's those two things. It's always been, at least for me, jumping in and then watching, or both, or doing one or the other.
Yep.
Because I found that it changed a bit going into leadership roles whenever I was in the Marine Corps. Jumping right in and immersing yourself and then doing what you need to do if you have the time to do it, because there are situations where you don't have the time to sit around and look. But if you have the time and you can observe people and observe situations, it's so much more rewarding than just jumping in and reacting.
Totally.
And so you're in it, you're immersed in it, you're observing. I think a lot of the time people are disheartened or they become depressed and they might stop their pursuit because of failure. How do you deal with a failure or a perceived failure when things just don't go your way and you're on that path, let's say, to speaking?
You know, I think, again, using maybe two ideas here in tandem, but it's evaluation and awareness. And the evaluation phase of pursuing mastery for me came about. I bought a digital recorder, like a little Sony handheld recording device. And I recommend anyone that wants to get better at, doesn't matter if it's speaking or if it's playing the guitar or, you know, whatever it may be, you should be recording yourself and then going back and reviewing how you did. And so for me, I started recording every time I got up on stage, excuse me, and started, you know, speaking to a group. I would record the whole thing, and then right after, on the way home, I would listen to it, and I would think to myself, no, that was pretty good, or I had the audience at that point, but I lost them on this joke, or that joke was just, you know, flat out bad, so I'm not going to do it again. I might think the timing of this could be different because it doesn't make sense why I'm talking about X when X should be after, you know, after this section. And I evaluated. And some of that evaluation was being aware of how what I was listening to made me feel and or what I was saying to myself. So when people do get critical, you know, it's like if I'm critical of myself in a speaking gig, I'm thinking, why am I being critical of that particular joke? Is it that I wanted to be more connected, or is it that I didn't feel the energy, so maybe I need more energetic activities or exercises? It was just that constant awareness. And I think some of that is just in that pursuit of mastery, being aware of where you're at and how you feel and sort of challenging that notion as you go along.
I don't know how I missed this in the introduction, but you also have a podcast that you just finished, didn't you?
I did. I wrapped it up. It was an amazing experiment, if you will. I did the Build a Bigger Life podcast. And my notion behind it, Chris, it's very relatable to our topic.
Sure.
I had come to this point in my speaking business where I've been doing the money game, which is my sort of my typical program on money on college campuses for the past 12 years. And I've grown it to a point where my income from that program is really pretty good, but I'm at a ceiling in terms of, or maybe a plateau. I don't think it's a ceiling, but maybe a plateau of what I can charge for a college to realistically bring me in. And it's, you know, okay. It's healthy. But I kept thinking, I think I know that I'm worth more, you know, having been invited to do two TED Talks and I've got, absolutely, you know, massive numbers of audience that have seen me present that have told me my skill relative to everyone else and all of that. So I know that I'm worth it, but I wanted to create a higher level keynote address. Okay. And I decided that I was going to do this podcast as a way of collecting all the stories for me to tell this high-level keynote.
Sure.
So I did it for a year. I recorded about 85 to 90 episodes, built an amazing amount of content, had some incredible interactions with some crazy cool people.
Sure.
And at the end, I was like, you know, I'm not sure that's the topic I want to talk about. I think it really is this money talk. And mm-hmm. Build a Bigger Life will always be a program that I'll offer, and I'm, you know, building something out right now based on that podcast. But it was the awareness for me as that year drew to a close that it's like, this has been great, but this is not what I want to be doing. And go ahead.
And the reason why I brought it up is because even though you're ending and I'm just starting, this seems like the perfect example of being able to observe yourself and having to be aware, because I'll tell you, the first couple episodes that I did, the first couple interviews, I would listen back and think to myself, how am I saying the word awesome so much? Stop saying that. I'd be in my house yelling that at myself. And it seems like that is a very easy way to critique yourself is on a podcast. How often did you do that during your first couple episodes?
Every episode. I still do. I'll sit and listen to some of those episodes when I'm driving in the car, and I'm super critical of what I'm saying or how I'm saying it. I got to an extent, it got to an extent that I started writing down and keeping a list of all of my segue comments. So I wasn't saying, that's so cool, or like in your case, awesome, or right. You know, it was those kinds of verbal pauses or whatever. And the more you listen to really, really exceptionally good podcasters and radio hosts and TV hosts, they have become very proficient at the segue and the, I agree with you. And what do you think about X, you know? It just, it's a skill, and you're in the pursuit of mastery, and you're in the awareness phase, which is awesome.
Yeah, I have absolutely started listening to interviews in a different way. I can definitely say that, because normally I'm in there for the content of the person being interviewed.
Yep.
And all of a sudden I'm listening to segues, listening to the phrasing of a question and the give and take. So yeah, it's a really interesting place to be in as far as evaluating. So if there are people, hey, and I just did something that I always do. I started off with so. If people would like to see what you're up to, contact you, reach out to you to bring you to a campus or to an organization to speak or watch your documentary, how can they do that?
Right now, the best site probably to go to is adamspeaks.com, which on that site you'll find information about me, a link to click if you're interested in figuring out, you know, booking information or what my topics are. There's some podcasts and some blog info out there. The documentary is available on the site, so you can click a link and it'll take you to the brokebusteddisgusted.com website. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the coming weeks, you certainly plug in your name and email address on the site right now at Adam Speaks. And when moneysavvy.com is live, which will be relatively soon, you'll get a notification that it is live and there's going to be some freebies and some amazingly cool content out there. But right now, adamspeaks.com would be the best place to go.
I cannot wait to check that out, because I know you, you're a bit of a perfectionist and you won't release it until it is fully good.
I feel like this has been the cake I've been baking for years, and and I've collected all of this cool design stuff and logo examples and the best of the best blog posts and how people are, you know, building their business with that. I want this site to be the go-to site for people who just, they want control of their money once and for all. And ultimately what I'm after for everyone is financial freedom. You know, I want them all to live a life like I've been able to for the past several years. And it's just an amazingly cool way to live. And I want to help people get there.
I absolutely love it. So I love, and I do it and I have done it, end each podcast in an offbeat kind of way. So today I'd like to try some word association or phrase association.
Giddy up. That sounds awesome.
Yep. So I'm going to say a word or a phrase, and the first thing that pops in your head would be the response. And it doesn't have to be just a one-word response. Whatever is in your brain.
Okay.
You ready?
Okay, I'm ready. Shoot.
Des Moines.
Rockin' Metropolis.
Family.
Crazy Children.
Friends.
Super Friends.
Gold.
Must have.
Debt.
Must not have.
Loans.
Pay them off early.
Purdue University.
Go Boilermakers. And Mitch Daniels. And incredible school.
Beautiful. KKDM 107.5.
Oh, the dot. That was my very first employer out of college. And I loved that business. That was an amazingly fun business to be in. But part of that was I was selling radio ads to restaurants and bars. So I mean, imagine being 22 or 23 and your clients are all bars and restaurants. It's
okay.
Not pretty.
1040 Who Radio.
Ooh, 1040 WHO. Liz Need, she was my co-host on that show. She asked me to come in and like co-host a morning program with her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Vanilla Ice.
Oh, gosh. Funnest night of my life. Vanilla Ice came back and played at a bar called Harry Mary's. And it was after he had left the rapper scene and was now a heavy metal artist.
Okay.
And at the very end of his show, which everyone was there for, he did Vanilla Ice and rapped Vanilla Ice. And it was ridiculous. I mean, it was just so off the chain. It was funny.
And you knew every word, I'm
assuming.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
College.
Take heed, I'm a lyrical poet.
College.
The longest and most expensive party I've ever been to.
Last one, Shag Nasties.
Shag Nasties. $6,000 in credit card debt because of Shag Nasties. You have to understand, this was like the darkest, most stick-to-the-floor, thumpingest dance club there was in Cedar Falls, Iowa, where I went to school. And people would go there, and there were illicit things happening in dark corners. But it was an amazing, amazingly fun place to go hang out. And, many, many memories out of that place.
Yep, that version for Purdue University is called Where Else.
Where Else, yeah, exactly.
Because it's the last thing that closes, and where else are you going to go?
That's awesome. You know, there's every single school has one of those. I've been at huge, multi-campus events where there's students represented from hundreds of universities. And I'll say, what is that one place you all have, blah, 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 on the count of three? Everyone has one. Everyone.
That's great. Adam, I appreciated this interview, and I appreciate your time. I feel like we could probably do five more of these on random topics.
Well, if you want to do that, Chris, I'm all in. I love the whole idea of professional by choice. I think we do make that decision every day. And there are people who decide to be professional and those who decide not to be professional. And it's very simple. I have an armband that I wear on almost a daily basis, and it says DWYSYWYD, DWYSYWD, and it stands for do what you say you would do. And I think if you're going to be professional by choice, it's very simple. Just do what you say you're going to do.
Absolutely. Integrity is exactly what it is.
Totally.
Adam, I appreciate your time. I hope you have a good day.
Thanks, Chris. You're awesome.
Thank you for listening to this PBC podcast. If you liked what you heard, leave a review for future listeners and let us know what you thought of this episode. We would love to hear from you. You can also head over to professionalbychoice.com to be kept up to date on our new episodes released every Monday. The ball is now in your court. How are you choosing to be a better professional each day?